music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Happy to welcome an up-and-coming talent from Nova Scotia to the show. Renee Smith has been involved in music since the age of 5 and counts Alicia Keys and Chaka Khan as influences. We're talking to Renee about her musical goals and her latest single called Last Call. We talk Oscar fashion with our fashion consultant Parmal Gahania, who will wear what and who will wear it best on Academy Awards night. Parmal has your answers. We wrap things up with Canadian rock band The Moors, chatting about their latest album, Kings of Nowhere, and single called Better. This talented young artist hails from Nova Scotia and has been singing and playing the piano since the age of 5. She credits Brandy, Beyoncé, Alicia Keys, and the legendary Chaka Khan as musical influences. Renee Smith has also won a ton of awards in her burgeoning career, including the 2015 Artist of the Year at the African Nova Scotian Music Awards. Renee, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you for having me.
So I wanted to start off by asking you, you got involved in music at such a young age. I'm assuming the church played a part in that.
Definitely. My grandfather is the pastor at our local church, so I grew up in the church my whole life since I was a baby and just grew up around the music from the church. My dad and my grandfather played in a band for almost 20 years when I was a small child, so I got to see them perform and travel and play music. And that was a big influence on me. Also, my mother's family is also very musical. Her brother, Carson Downey, he's very well-known blues musician here in Halifax. So I just grew up around all of that music, and it really placed a deep passion in me for music.
How important is playing the piano for you? Is that sort of an extension of who you are?
I would say yes. I usually run to the piano whenever I don't want to be around anybody else. So I guess it's that place of peace and just being to myself and really trying to be creative and getting away from everything else that's going on.
Now, how would you describe yourself as an artist?
That's a tricky one. I'm a person who just likes to be very expressive when it comes to music. Pretty much put everything out there within the music. So I guess I would say as a musician, I'm just very free-spirited, or I just want to portray emotions and things like that. I mean, it's just my way to show people who I am. So it's very, very deep and very personal.
Now, your musical influences, I mentioned sort of off the top, Brandy, Beyoncé, Alicia Keys, mm-hmm. and Chaka Khan. What is it about these women specifically that speaks to you, not only as a person, but also as a recording artist?
Well, first of all, they all have their own sound, which is very important for me. They're all unique. When you hear any of them on a particular recording, right off the bat, as soon as you hear that voice, it's them. They all have their signature styles, their signature looks, and they all have, great, great music careers. And also some of them actually have careers in other areas like acting and things like that, perfumes and all of that stuff. So I just look at them and I see their career, and it's something that's amazing for me. And also their voices, their talent is just so, so amazing. And that's had a big effect on me and my music and how I approach writing and things like that. So, yeah, I just love listening to them.
Do you find that they, on some level, have seeped into your sound a little bit? Because I know it's so easy to have that happen. Like, mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of Janet Jackson, and it seems that stuff that she does has seeped into my situation. So I'm wondering if it's the same for you.
Right. Totally. I guess when you listen to someone so much, you don't even realize that it's happening until you listen to something back and you're like, oh, that reminds me of such and such, or mm-hmm. I totally just almost stole that from their record. But but yeah, I totally see myself doing that sometimes. Okay. And it's always neat when people come and they give you that comparison, like, oh my God, you remind me of, or you sound like, and it's like, well, yeah, I've listened to them enough, so mm-hmm. I can see that happening. Yeah, so definitely that happens.
Now, would you describe yourself as, an R&B artist or a jazz R&B artist or a singer-songwriter? Because I find, each of those signifies a different thing for people mm-hmm. when you're described as such.
Sure. I guess right now, with my musical sound, I guess you could say I'm an R&B artist. But that's definitely not the limit of what I do and what I can do. I've been singing gospel my whole life. I've sung blues. I've sung jazz. I did 2 years singing jazz at university. I've sung flamenco music. I've done country. I've sang it all. So right now I'm nearing it down to the R&B, but I usually sing a lot of different things back here in Halifax. Never limited to just one thing. So,
what do you think of other artists from Canada who have kind of done what you're doing now, obviously in their own way, but like a Deborah Cox or a Tamia? Like, do you feel like, and they obviously went south of the border, I think, to get more success. Do you think that the music that you're producing at the moment lends itself to the Canadian music scene?
I do. I definitely feel like Canadians will enjoy the music. Obviously, there's kind of a bigger market for R&B in the U.S. And, you know, that would be great to venture out over to the U.S. to perform and to get my music out there. But I really do feel that there's a place for R&B here in Canada, and people really love and enjoy it. So I've had lots of success so far, and I think that the longer we go on, the more that more people will be open to it and accepting of it. And yeah, I think the sky's the limit.
That's awesome. Well, I can't wait for you to keep doing what you're doing, because I think your song is amazing, which we're going to get to in just a sec. I do want to let people know that joining us on the show is Canadian recording artist Renee Smith. You can learn more about her on her website, imrenee.com. Renee, do you think that being from Nova Scotia has played a significant part in your sound and who you are as an artist? Because I've been fortunate to interview, I guess, a couple of your, we'll call them musical colleagues in a way, Classified and Rhea May. And that's like obviously a very Halifax, you know, sound that they're coming out with, and it's just awesome. Right. And I think it, and they've both said that there's like a tight community there. How do you feel about being from that area of the country?
I love it. I mean, it's very true. It's a very tight-knit community, so all the musicians know each other. They all work with each other, so that Nova Scotian sound is pretty much our stamp, you know. It's a trademark, so to say. And I've had the opportunity to work with Classified a little bit in the past years. I've also worked with Corey LaRue of Neon Dreams, and we're all just trying to put Nova Scotia on the map and put that sound out there so that people know that, you know, we're here, we exist. Nova Scotia is a place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know that there are so many talented musicians coming out of Nova Scotia. So I'm just happy that we can all go and promote Nova Scotia, and we're doing it together as a team. So I think that's a great thing.
Do you think, Renee, that you will inevitably have to maybe move? Because what I love about Classified is that he has chosen to stay where he is, you know, even though obviously he's traveling across the country and doing his thing. But, you know, he's never picked up and gone to Toronto, I think, where a lot of artists have done that. Do you think that you'll have to do that, or even, you know, maybe down the future head to New York or Los Angeles?
Right. Ideally, I would like to, you know, have my home base here in Halifax and sort of do what Class is doing. But I guess for me, it would depend on what's happening in my career. If the best choice for me would be to move, then I would definitely do that. But it's not my first choice.
Okay.
It's definitely not my first choice.
Well, I support you staying where you are, because I know what it's like to have to move away. So I'm so excited to talk to you about your song, Last Call. First of all, I've told you before, it's amazing. It really sounds like, it just sounds super fresh to me. Like, it sounds like a really kick-ass 2016, like, here we go, this is what we're doing. So can you talk to us a little bit about what you want your fans to pull from it and new fans to pull from it as well?
Well, I just want people to hear it and jam to it, be able to dance, play it at parties, play it, you know, when you're home alone, you just want to have some fun, put on some cool music, you know, play it at your wedding reception. I just want people to hear it and just have fun, be happy, and just jam with it.
Is there going to be an album on the way, or are you going to focus on singles? I ask that because I find that in the last couple of years, the industry as a whole, whether we're talking about Canadian or even American, it's turned into like a singles market.
Right now, I am working on an album to be released sometime in April. I'm going to be releasing a few more singles, but there's definitely going to be an EP to follow all of that. So I guess I'm kind of doing both. I'm doing the singles first and then just going to release the project later.
Now, what's coming up for you? Because I understand that you're heading south of the border to do some writing. Where are you going to do that?
I'm heading down to Nashville.
Which is like the new hotspot. It's kind of like the new hotspot for writing, I find.
I know, it is. It is. Everybody's going there and writing kick-ass tunes, so I guess I'm just jumping on the boat.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I did want to ask you if you had an opportunity to collaborate with a Canadian artist right now, who would that be and why?
Right now, probably I'd love to be able to collab with someone like Julie Black. She's an amazing artist. I had the opportunity to open for her 2 years ago here in Halifax. Also, Divine Brown. She's unbelievable. Those two, I think I would love to have the opportunity to work with the two of them.
Awesome. Now, when it comes to social media, how important is it for you to connect with your fans on that kind of basically a one-to-one basis? And do you also find that it's helping you sort of open up to finding and letting people know that you're out there, you know, without sort of major record label support? Because that's its own beast, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I think it's very important. And I'm the type of person who's, you know, very closed in and always keeps to myself. So having that outlet where I'm not actually face-to-face with people, but I can share and I can express and promote and do all of that, I think that's so important, especially being an unsigned artist, not having that label to promote and advertise for me. I think it's the biggest tool that an artist could have.
And do you find when you're performing on stage that you get to show a different side of yourself? Like, for example, with Beyonce, you know, she sort of has those different personalities where she becomes Sasha Fierce.
Right.
Is that sort of how
right.
you are, Renee, when you're on? Because I just noticed you mentioned that you're sort of a bit, I know you didn't say the word shy, but you sort of said it sort of, I guess, surrounding yourself kind of thing. Do you open up when you're on stage? Is that where the other part of your personality gets to shine?
That's totally what happens. I'm actually a very shy person, which is kind of ironic. I'm actually very shy, but on the stage, it's just freeing, and I can just express myself in the way that I want to and talk about myself through my music. So it's really the main way that people get to know me and get to see who I really am, which is why I think I kind of like it so much.
That's awesome. And when you are, what do you want you know, fans and new fans to know about you? Because like right now we're fortunate that, you know, we have a lot of Canadian fans that are listening, but also my show is broadcast overseas and in places like Australia and Indonesia and Singapore. So for someone who's over there who might, you know, cause I'm going to play the song, can't wait for them to hear it. What do you want for them to pull from you as an artist and why they should start following you on your social media?
Well, I'm young and fresh, fresh new sound. Definitely a great sense of humor. So probably always find something funny on my social media pages.
That's awesome.
I'm just trying to make great music. So, you know, jump on board.
Fantastic. So thank you so much for this. We really appreciate your time and you're welcome back on the show at any time. And I hope you come to Montreal because I really want to see you perform this song.
Yeah, me too.
Awesome. That is Canadian recording artist Renee Smith. Again, make sure to check out her website, iamrenee.com.
Hey, this is Renee Smith. You're hanging out on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Flashing lights are so inviting. Know you love the sirens. We're like diamond share, we're shining. Come on, light the fire.
Emergency, you got what I need. I know I got what you want. You can be my 911. A little bit of love, a little bit of not leaving alone. You're my last call. And I ain't talking about drinking, baby. All night long, I love just how you make it easy. You can be my last call. Emergency, you got what I need. I know I got what you want. You can be my 911. A little bit of love, little bit of not leaving alone. You're my last call. And I ain't worried about thinking, baby. You can be my last call.
We don't fight it, we don't have to fix it. It's not broken when I hope and that we'll find the reasons. We just open up, we're close and that we both can feel it. Baby, sound the alarm.
Emergency, you got what I need. I know I got what you want. You can be my 911. A little bit of love, little bit of not leaving alone. You're my last call.
so inviting, know you love the sirens. We're like diamond shower shining, come on, light the fire.
You're my last call.
Find us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Click on KellyAlexanderShow.com.
It's that time of year again to have our fashion consultant, Parmal Gahunia, on the show talking about all that is Hollywood award shows. We've already gone through some of the award shows, so now Parmal has a good idea about maybe what we can actually expect to see at the upcoming Academy Awards at the end of the month. Parmal, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. It's good to be back. Happy award season.
Yay! Yeah, I think you and I always get like very excited to just see what the celebrities are going to wear, because each and every year, I mean, there's always sort of a classic look that just sort of hangs around, but then there's always the chance takers, or the risk takers, if you will, and it's always exciting to see what color. I'm always looking for what the color is sort of going to be for the specific award show season, so thank you for doing the research for us and getting us ready to go. I did want to mention that if you want to check out, Parmal's fashion situation, make sure to check out her website, parmal-gahunia.com. So far, Parmal, when it comes to the big awards, you know, we've had the SAGs that have already gone through, and of course, the Golden Globes, I think, are the big precursor as to what could be coming down the pike with regards to the Academy Awards and the winners. But when it comes to fashion, is it a similar situation, or do people go different from the Golden Globes to the Oscars?
Well, I think they definitely, like you said, a precursor. I think they definitely, a lot of the celebrities choose their gowns altogether. So they'll get, you know, their fittings, and various designers will bring them dresses. And they usually pick, so Golden Globes will have a very beautiful look, but maybe not as elegant as the Oscars. Then you'll have the SAGs, which is a little bit probably less important than the Globes. But usually, like, the Globes are really a great gown, and then the SAGs are pretty decent gown, and then the Oscars, everyone goes all out. So usually people pick them all together just so that they kind of know what their look is going to be for the entire awards season. It's very rare that people actually leave things to the last minute. Mm-hmm. But there are obviously celebrities that do so. I think the people to always watch for are the newcomers. It's always nice to see the ones that are nominated that are maybe brand new to the scene, because they always bring something different to the red carpet.
Wow. Now, when it comes to what we can expect, or some of the things that you've seen so far, which actresses are standout for you, and what are you seeing from them this award show season?
So I think it's all about the newcomers this year, Kel. Like, I think there's so many people that are fresh faces that it's really kind of refreshing to watch the red carpet. So Brie Larson for Room, who is totally kind of the it girl right now for the red carpet. Saoirse Ronan, mm-hmm. Everyone always has a hard time saying her name, from Brooklyn. And then Rooney Mara and Alicia Vikander from The Danish Girl. These are all really fresh faces, and actually they're kind of the ones to watch on the red carpet. We've really been seeing a lot of high necklines, and then the complete contrary, which is deep plunging necklines with cleavage. Mm-hmm. But in terms of colors, like, there's lots of bronzes. We've seen baby blue from Brie Larson. Tonal whites is a really, really big this year, with lots of sequins, and then soft pinks. So a lot of pastels for sure. And the big one that we've kind of seen a lot of stars wear, Eva Longoria, was that emerald blue. So lots of sparkle and shimmer for sure. But the three that we're watching for is obviously Brie Larson, Saoirse Ronan, and then Alicia Vikander.
Okay,
but
cool.
Definitely, like I said, those are the three we're watching for. And if we talk about kind of what they wore at mm-hmm. the awards show, you'll understand why.
So what was Brie up to then?
So Brie was definitely, I think, like I said, the one that made everyone's best dressed list. So for she's a definitely a heavy favorite to win the Oscar. So I think it's going to be exciting to see what she brings to the Oscars.
Yeah.
She's going to kind of be like the Lupita of a few years ago, America's Sweetheart. I think the next one, maybe she's going to take Jennifer Lawrence's spot. Who knows? For Brie Larson, she was a heavy favorite in the Best Actress for Room. And then I think that what we saw her wear at the Globes in that gorgeous bronze statuesque gown, the Calvin Klein, it was like almost a two-part cutout gown, was on everyone's best dress. I remember Fashion Police talked about it for a really long time. She, but at the SAGs, really, she was kind of the standout for me. She wore that Altier Versace baby blue gown. It was absolutely stunning. She actually admitted that on the red carpet that she had chosen it that morning, which I thought was a little bit risky, but totally she pulled it off, so why not, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think she's probably, everyone was surprised that she's not one of the people that have picked their gowns in advance, but she really was leaving the last minute. I think that's pretty great, because for 2 out of 3 to make it, you know, on the best dress list by doing that, I think that's pretty gutsy. And then Saoirse Ronan, mm-hmm. for me, she's just kind of like so fresh right now. Her face, everything about her, she has this stunning like porcelain skin that you just want to like look at her face all day long. But she was goddess like at the Globes in that Grecian Saint Laurent gown, white. She just really looks beautiful. But for me, she was totally the best dressed at the SAGs. I just loved her Michael Kors blush pink gown that she was wearing. It was pink and shimmery, and it had a high neckline. I mean, really, she looked like just so effortlessly beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
She had her hair up in a high bun. She had these beautiful Forever Mark earrings. And honestly, she was just a breath of fresh air on the red carpet. She just looked really like, almost like I said, porcelain doll, just beautiful. And then the other one that took a complete risk, I think, and was really the one I picked for being completely different on the red carpet was Alicia Vikander.
Okay.
A lot of people have heard about her. She's fairly new, and then she's from The Danish Girl. She's really kind of, again, that super young, fresh look. Everyone kind of, it's very minimal what everyone's doing with their hair right now. So the focus is definitely on the gown. So we saw her in a Louis Vuitton sequins patchwork gown. So it had like kind of all these square patches all over it, some in white, some in bronze, some in black, some in brown.
Yeah.
And it was really just a fitted gown, but super, super different from what anybody else was wearing. So those were my 3 picks for people who are definitely going to be ones to watch on the red carpet. I think for the Oscars, they might take it a bit more classic.
Yeah.
Because people tend to take more risks for the SAGs and the Globes.
Yeah.
But I think we'll still see a lot of old Hollywood glam coming through for the Oscars. But I do still hope that they take a little bit of that more fresh approach and not, you know, the princess strapless kind of same thing that we see every year. Because, I mean, you can kind of get a little bit boring. Like, Kate Winslet, I love her to pieces, but I wish she would just, again, take a bit more of a risk.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of wears these boring gowns every single time. They look great on her. There's nothing wrong with it, but they, you know, leaves you wanting more a little bit.
Right, right. Now, I wanted to ask you, because I know we're focusing on these 3, which is fantastic, especially because, like, when you brought up the 3 names, it was like, yeah, these are definitely fresh-faced people for us, you know, because we're so used to sort of, like you said, sort of hearing about the Jennifer Lopez or Jennifer Lawrence the last couple of years. And of course, Jennifer Aniston, like all the Jens are always bringing the noise.
Yeah, totally. Don't get me wrong. J-Lo's still my girl. I didn't want to bring her up again. I feel like we bring her up every single year.
It's true.
People might be like, oh gosh, again, Parmel, seriously, we've seen your Instagram page. You probably stalk her a little too much.
Oh no, it's good. I think she continues to just rock it. I can't believe she's in her mid 40s because she looks like she's 27 still. So it's amazing.
Well, she just came out of January, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was all about her. She just gets better and better with age.
Yeah.
And really, she was after those 3, Jennifer Lopez was everyone's favorite best dressed at the Globes in that beautiful, like, Giambattista Valli gown, the yellow, beautiful, like, caped gown. She looked, like, goddess-like.
Right.
But, I mean, again, it's not really her year. She's not the it I mean, we would maybe say January was completely about her, but mm-hmm. really when it comes to Oscars, she's not really nominated or anything. So I think it was just nice of her to be there and look great as usual, but it's not about her this year.
Now, I have to make you jump over to the boys for a couple of moments. Of course, we always know that they've just got tuxes to put on, but of course, some of them do spice it up a little. I think it was last year or 2 years ago when Matthew McConaughey had that, green velour?
2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that was nice. And I kind of like when the boys mix it up a little bit.
Jared Leto and him had a competition going.
Yeah, it's true. So this year, it seems like it's back to the classic for the most part, unless you're seeing sort of a Kevin Hart who also is going a little bit wild. But who's your
He's
man?
He's probably
the
only one.
Yeah.
Him and The Rock, I forget his real name.
Dwayne Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Dwayne Johnson, thank you. We're the only ones on the red carpet that really took a chance, and obviously Ryan Seacrest too, because he has his own line, right?
Yeah.
Of clothing now, so he kind of takes it up a few notches, but it's kind of sad. I wish Leo would do something different. I don't know, but
yeah,
happening.
Do you think he'll stay super classic for the Oscars? Because it looks like, you know, it's his year, so.
It's his year. I think he will, actually, because we've never seen him wear anything other than a classic tux, even though it might be tailored differently. He might wear, a skinny tie instead of a bow tie, mm-hmm. a three-piece instead of a two. Maybe his lapel will be shiny instead of matte, minor details, but still a classic tux.
Yeah.
I think when you're up to win an Oscar, unless you're Matthew McConaughey, you're probably going to wear something more on the classic side,
mm-hmm.
only because, again, they're going to replay that clip. And if you have a really standout speech like Matthew McConaughey did, people are going to watch it later on in years to come, and you don't want to look schleppy. Although
right.
he'll never look schleppy because he's just gorgeous and everybody loves Leo. Really, I'm happy for him. I think this is a great year for him. I think he deserves it.
Okay.
But I think that, he's going to probably be a bit more classic. And then Jacob Tremblay is my other person who
the little
is
man.
Just too adorable. He's so cute. Have you seen him in interviews?
He's
so
super
much
cute
fun.
And happy to be there, which is great.
Totally happy and so funny. He was on Ellen the other day, and mm-hmm. Even he was talking to, he was on the red carpet show, and he's hilarious. He's really, really funny. So he was wearing a gray tux the other day, actually. So mm-hmm. he was actually probably the only one who was a little bit different. But again, for the Oscars, I think people go a little more classic.
Okay.
Unless they're just, like I said, Matthew McConaughey, Jared Leto year was kind of probably the only year where we're really going to see something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do hope that we do see a little bit more of the trendier pieces, like the red, the burgundy or the wine velvet jacket.
Yep.
Velvet is huge this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think any of those colors would look great on someone, but I'm not sure we're going to see it. Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. Now, before I let you... No, it's good. Now, before I let you go, I did want to ask you, just to hypothesize, who do you think is going to be the best dressed, and who do you think is going to be the worst dressed?
The worst dressed? Let's see. That's a hard one. Let me think about that.
It's not Lady Gaga anymore, because she's cleaned it up. She's not being crazy.
No, she looks phenomenal.
She looks amazing.
Mm-hmm. Sarah Silverman, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
She's
okay.
Nominated, right? Oh, I don't know if she's nominated for an Oscar, actually. But she was at the SAGs and she was nominated. I don't know. I know she's a great comedian.
Yeah.
She didn't really bring it up for me. I think she might be worse dressed.
Okay.
You never really know, though. That one's a hard one to anticipate because, I mean, it could be really anyone. Mm-hmm. You hope it's not the favorite.
Well, it's kind of when they just, when one of them decides to be like, I'm going to just be different. And then they wear the...
Too different.
Yeah, they wear the goose dress. You know what I mean? It's just, or the dead swan dress. It's just, don't do it. Although we haven't seen that obviously for a
totally
while.
No, I totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree. But I mean, there's people who you definitely know won't be because their stylists are too good.
Yeah.
Like all the gens, right?
Yeah, all the gens, yeah.
Definitely all the gents. Although, I mean, if we're going to talk about Jennifer Lawrence, I just want to see her in something other than red again, please.
Right,
any other color. There's lots of them out there. Maybe Dakota Johnson. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of hers.
Yeah, okay.
But she has pretty good fashion sense, though. She might not. It's a hard one. I'm still going to go with Sarah Silverman.
Okay, gotcha. And then best dressed?
Jennifer Lopez, we're going to take out of the scenario.
That's good.
So
that's
I think... it's going to be tough between, I think it's either going to be Brie Larson or Saoirse Ronan.
Okay.
I really do think it's going to be one of those. But if I had to pick between the two,
mm-hmm.
the total package, Saoirse Ronan.
Okay.
Brie Larson, sometimes her hair is just a little bit off. So if we're going to go for the full look,
yep,
definitely going to be Saoirse Ronan.
Okay, awesome. Well, you rock my world. I want to thank you, as always, for doing our Fashion Friday each and every Friday. It's fantastic. I think it's like 3 years now you've been doing it, maybe even longer. So thank you. Thank you. Thank
number 144 this week.
Yay. That's amazing. So, so thank you for that. And thank you for doing this. We really, really appreciate it. Can't wait to have you back on.
Take care, Kelly. It's good talking to you.
So that is our fashion consultant, Parmal Gahunia. Again, make sure to check out her Fashion Fridays each and every Friday on our Facebook page, as well as on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show. And of course, you can check out her own website, which is parmal-gahunia.com.
Listen anytime, anyplace, KellyAlexanderShow.com.
This next group is embedded in rock, taking a page from AC/DC, Heart, and the Runaways, with a tinge of the Foo Fighters to boot. Fronted by lead vocalist and guitarist Jackie Moore, the Moores are making noise with their new album Kings of Nowhere and latest single Better. Jackie, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Very happy to have you. I wanted to start off by finding out how you yourself got into music.
Well, I had this friend that I would, you know, kind of summer with up at the cottage, and he started taking guitar lessons, and he had this really slick red Ibanez electric guitar, and I fell in love with it, and I went home that summer, and I told my folks I needed to start taking guitar lessons. So, yeah, my dad found me this like, similar-looking electric red guitar that I love, I still have, and I started taking lessons, and it just snowballed from there. I started teaching guitar, I started playing in bands, like, cover bands, and then started doing my own thing, just started getting into originals, and then it just kind of took off.
Would you say that the guitar is sort of an extension of yourself?
Yeah, it actually is very much so. The kind of discussion for me to not play guitar as much and or not at all and just kind of be a front woman and sing has kind of come up a lot, but I think it's, it very much is something that I kind of pride myself on. I love playing guitar, and I've, you know, worked hard to be a guitar player, so it was something that I always wanted to keep in what I do, and I think that it kind of, it's cool, you know, you see a lot of more and more females in music, but, you know, I love seeing females play guitar always, so it's kind of, yeah, something I like to keep.
Now, how did the band actually come together, and the second part of that question will be, do you find added pressure fronting a band with your name on it?
Well, so me and my guitar player, Mark Gerardin, we came out here to do a record with producer Hoxley Workman, and kind of near the ending of it, when it was all kind of wrapping up, we were like, hey, we got to find two other members. We got to put this band together, because we were really itching to play. Like, the record was done, and we wanted to see how it sounded live. And, you know, we went through a few players, but we knew Max and Greg from a year earlier. We were all on a CBC television show together called Cover Me Canada. And Max and Greg were actually in the winning band. So I was well aware of them, but I kind of knew that they were still playing in that band. I didn't really want to rock the boat. But yeah, near the end of it, we were just like, you know what? They're both great players. Let's just call them and see if they're into it. So we started jamming with those guys, and it was easy. It's just like magic. They meshed with us personally, and then their music styles just seemed to really kind of vibe with what we had going on. So that's kind of how the Moores got together. And actually, I didn't really come up with the name, to be honest. We spent like a year looking for a cool name, but it's like everything's been done, nothing's really that cool. Looking for a band name is like the worst thing you could possibly ever want to do. So yeah, we were going through like a bunch of band names, and then our producer Hoxley Workman always really liked my name, and so it kind of came up in discussion, and then everybody started thinking about ways to kind of work my name into the band's name, and then it just became the Moores, and they were into it, so I was like super into it. I was like, yeah, it's kind of badass. It's like, you know, it's like the Ramones or like the Donnas or something. So yeah,
very cool. Now, when I've listened to some of your music, obviously, and I've watched the video for Better, and I wanted to ask you, well, first of all, I thought it was really cool. And then second of all, I feel like I wanted to ask you if, because I noticed that you seem to have a really great presence, and I was wondering if that's because of the amount of shows that you have done, or do you feel like you were meant to do this?
Well, first of all, thank you. I don't know, maybe a bit of both. It was, it's really kind of been in the last couple of years. Like, I have played a lot of shows, you know, and I've learned a lot playing with other players and things like that. I think I've started to kind of, you know, kind of emulate some of the people that I love to watch, but you also kind of get your own thing going, and you kind of figure out what works up there and what makes you comfortable, really. And for me, like starting to play in the Moors, I'd never really been in a band where I loved the music so much. So I felt like that was an element that I stopped thinking about so much. It was just like, I love this music. I could really get into it. And so from that point on, I was just able to just kind of like focus on what I was doing up there and just like do what was natural. And it felt like really kind of tough rock and roll music. And so I just kind of started doing this thing where it just felt really natural to just kind of be me and just kind of be tough up there and just like really kind of strong. It was strong music. You know, I got three of my guys behind me and it just, yeah, I don't know. I think it's something that's just kind of in you maybe, but also just something that kind of develops as you play for sure.
Joining us on the show is Jackie Moore, lead singer and guitarist for Canadian rock band The Moors. Make sure to check out their website, themoorsband.com. Did you always think of yourself as being the lead singer of a band, or do you think you'd have a solo career?
You know what? I always thought of it as a band. I like the camaraderie. I like having those guys up there with me, or girls or whatever. I like having players with me to riff off of. I've never really thought of myself as a solo.
Okay, very cool. Now, I wanted to ask you as well, because you mentioned earlier that, you know, people that you've looked up to can possibly seep into how you perform a little bit. And I know that, for example, because I'm a huge Janet Jackson fan, all my listeners know that. And she somehow seeps into things that I do. So who did you admire growing up? And if you had the opportunity, would you collaborate with these people today?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you ask. One of my big, like someone that I really looked up to when I was growing up was like Ian Thornley from Big Wreck. I was a huge fan of that band, and we actually just recently played a festival like opening for them. So it was pretty wild, and he's such a great performer and guitar player, and I would love to collaborate with him. And, you know, like I said, my producer, Hoxie Workman, was a big hero of mine, and I've been able to collaborate with him for the past 3 years. So that's been kind of a real dream. And, you know, I guess I would have to say maybe I'm a big Our Lady Peace fan. I would love to do some Riding with Rain. That would be pretty cool.
Now I have to ask you this. I know you're like rock chick, but do you have like a guilty pleasure? Do you like the Rihannas of the world?
You know what I do? I really do. I'll tell you a guilty pleasure of mine. If it's even not guilty, but Britney Spears, that girl can write a song.
Nice.
I've always been a fan. Yeah.
talk to us about the new album. It's called Kings of Nowhere. What's the meaning behind the title? And did the album turn out as you thought it might?
Yeah. So Kings of Nowhere. It did turn out kind of like I thought it would in one sense. But we kind of kept going back to the drawing board because Hoxie Workman is a musical genius, but he's really great at like creating like hooks and making really big songs really. And he's always had this really cool like pop ear. And so like going into it, I was very much like, all right, we're going to write a rock record. And you know, there were parts of it that are, I consider to be a lot poppier than some other darker songs on the record. So at the end of it, we had this handful of songs that we really loved and we were wondering if they would all kind of fit on the same record. And it wasn't until we kind of got it mixed and mastered by, these guys in New York, Gus and Warner, that it really started to kind of all seep together and it's sounding like a cohesive record for me. But yeah, I love what it turned out to be. I think it's one of the best things that I've ever written. And it was like, the name, we actually just thought it might be like kind of an eponymous record. We were just like, we'll have our band name on there and it doesn't need a title. So we had that thinking for a long time. And then closer to the release, we're like, you know, maybe it should have a name. It deserves a name. So we just started looking at some of the album tracks and then Kings of Nowhere it came up as a idea to call the record. And I don't know that it's because the song directly like reflects the record or what the record's about, but that kind of name just started to kind of stick and kind of fit as like the band, what we were doing, where we were. It just kind of sounded neat. And yeah, I think it was just kind of more where the band was at. So we thought it was kind of fitting for the title.
If you had to pick one song on the album that you could perform over and over and over again and not get tired of it, which one would it be and why?
Good question. I love that question. It would be Youth, for sure. A, because I get to solo, which I love. But B, it's just my favorite song. I think, like, dynamically, it's just, like, it's got a lot of maybe, like, breaks in it, which I think a lot of our other songs don't have. Like, a lot of it's kind of, like, a lot of really moving parts and it kind of just like goes into like different hooks and things, which is really fun. But Youth kind of has this way of just kind of being like really kind of
these big heavy shots in the verse, and then it goes into this big chorus. And I just love playing it. I feel like it's always just a big like turnaround for us. When we play it live, people really start to like take notice and things. And so, yeah, I would play that for a whole hour if I could.
Nice. Now, I'm not sure if you do this or not, but when you guys are on stage, is there a song that you do that's a cover from someone else? And why did you choose that cover if that's what you do?
Yeah, we do actually. There's one cover that we've done since kind of the beginning of our kind of stage life. We started playing Maps by the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. And it was funny because like I went into this band and like I said, I played in cover bands before. And so I kind of wanted to be like, I don't want to play covers. Like, let's just play our stuff. I know people like them, but like, we're here to play our stuff. And then I just remember I heard it on the radio one day and it just reminded me what an amazing song it was. And I was like, whoa. And then we just jammed it in rehearsal and it sounded, you know, it's so funny to me, covers all the time. Sometimes you can think of a song that you love and you think you would do such a great job of it, but then you get in there and you start playing it and you're like, man, we really didn't do a good job of that. So, but this one, it seemed to really sound good with our sound and with the four of us playing it. And so we started throwing it into our live set and people kind of go nuts for it. And I love playing it. And I think it's cool that we throw it in there because, it kind of breaks up our set too. It's kind of like a totally different dynamic than some of our stuff that we play. So it's kind of like a cool, just a change in the set. But yeah, it's an awesome song. But that's the only one that we really do. There's like a 70s CanCon song by Michael Pagliaro that we do occasionally, but not nearly as often.
Okay. Hanging out with us on the show is Jackie Moore, lead singer and guitarist for Canadian rock band The Moors. Make sure to check out their website, themoorsband.com. I wanted to ask you about this, going overseas. Like, I know you guys have obviously toured Canada. I just feel like the sound that you have would probably go very well over in England. Is that like a goal to go head over across the pond?
Yeah, you should see my eyes just light up. Yes, no, that's very much something that I have wanted to do. Thanks. I think so, too. It's funny to me. You know, we've kind of been working this record in Canada and stuff like that. And it's can be kind of tricky to take it elsewhere. But I've always thought Europe would be a good place for us, you know, with just like the rock kind of thing and the grunge kind of thing. And I would love to go over there. We'll have to see when the right time is. I know it can be quite expensive over there, but I would do it absolutely. I think it would be a lot of fun. And I think I would hope people would respond really well to us.
Has there ever been an ambition for you to head south, like to New York or Los Angeles, or are you quite happy to sort of be based out of Toronto and doing your thing in Canada?
No, I think there is a real drive to go kind of to the States. It's been on my mind too. You know, I think a lot of it kind of relies on like radio and you know, hopefully if you're played down there, it can only help kind of boost your audience and stuff like that. But I think that's something that we wanted to look at for this year, actually. So I don't know exactly which states we'll be going to, but I just think it's such a cool market out there. And, you know, touring Canada is a lot of fun and the people are amazing, but everything's so spread out. And I think that sometimes when you tour the States, you can cover so much ground. And it's just different over there from what I've heard. I've never done it with this band. So, yeah, I think that's something that's in the works for this year.
How do you feel about the state of Canadian music, specifically in the genre that you're in? Do you think it's in a good place? You know, because I think we are sort of known in Canada for the rock peeps, if you will. Obviously, I know other people have done well, like the Justin Biebers of the world. But I feel like Canada is sort of known to rock out. Do you feel we're in a good place still, or do you think we're getting stale?
You know what? I'm glad you asked that. And I think it's been... I guess I was kind of worried about the state of rock in general, but in Canada for sure. But it was funny, you know, when we started this record, we were kind of like, you know, I think rock's coming back. Like, I think it's coming back in a big way and everything kind of comes full circle. You know, you got rock, you got disco, you got pop. It's like, I think that this is a time where people are starting to really enjoy like live shows again and bands and stuff like that and rock. And it's funny to see all these like 90s Canadian rock acts just kind of starting to surface again and starting to tour again and doing all these things. And I mean, I had the same question. I was like, I don't know what these guys are going to play like anymore. But yeah, we just had a show with like I said, Big Wreck and I Mother Earth and the Trues, and like, they're incredible. I don't think that they've gone stale at all. In fact, I think that they're all feeling kind of inspired, which is inspiring for us. And I think that it's coming back and we want to be kind of, taking full advantage of that.
Before I let you go, what's up next for you and the band now that the album is out? Is it, you know, like tour and some videos?
Yeah, sort of. It is that. We definitely have a really cool video that we're trying to get made with Steve Bays from Hot Out Heat and Hoxley kind of this summer. And then, yeah, touring in the fall, I think another Canada tour, like I said, hopefully the States. But silly as it sounds, now that the first record's out, it's all about the second record. We're kind of, yeah, we got to, you know, it's funny. You kind of put so much work into that record, and then when it's done, you kind of like, well, okay, you breathe, you take a step back, but then it's right back to the drawing board. You know, you got to get in the studio and keep being productive and keep writing and always keep writing. So, yeah, we're kind of really heavily thinking about the second and what we want it to sound like and kind of creating some tracks that we can put together for that.
You're a cool cat. Thank you so much for spending time with us. We really appreciate
it. Thanks, Kelly.
That's Jackie Morgan, lead singer and guitarist for Canadian rock band The Moors. Make sure to check out their website, themoorsband.com.
Hey, it's Jackie Moore from The Moors, and you're hanging out on The Kelly Alexander Show.
To have this man on the show. Stonebridge is an amazing DJ, remixer, and producer. He had an incredible 2015 with singles like Losing Control, Believe It, Out of Nowhere, and A World Without You. And now he's back with a new song called If You Like It, featuring vocalist Elsa Lee Jones. The track will be available digitally everywhere as of February 29th. Take a listen, If You Like It, on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Right over here, I know you want me. Come face your fear. to mine. Come on up, baby, stop messing with my mind. You know I want ya, you know I will. You know I'll take it down, make it real. I can make you my man if you like it. I can make you my man if you like it. I can make you my man if you like it. I can make you my man if you like it.
The Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us on the show this week. We always appreciate your time, and a big thank you going out to our guests, Reini Smith, Carmel Gahunia, and the Moors. Here's your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from Ernest Hemingway. The world breaks everyone, and afterward, some are strong at the broken places. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media. You can check it out on our website, kellyalexandershow.com. And of course, we'd love for you to check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/kellyalexandershow. Have an excellent week. You and I'll chat soon.